My dear faithful, for this last conference, I want to speak to you about the fruits of Fatima, the aftermath of Fatima. After Our Lady came down on this earth, what sort of effect did her apparitions have? We know that, of course, whenever Our Lady comes, there have to be great benefits that are bestowed upon the human race. There are always temporal benefits, such as healings, and the cessation of war and the averting of calamities and so on. We always see this with Our Lady's apparitions. But more important than these benefits are the supernatural blessings, because those blessings have eternal consequences. These are the blessings of holiness, of conversion of souls, of sinners, of change of life. So we're going to look at some of the great blessings that came to the nation of Portugal from Our Lady's visit at Fatima, and then we'll look at some other blessings that came to other nations. But the first blessing that I have to remind you of is the holiness of the three seers. The fact is that these apparitions had an incredible effect on these three young children. We've already spoken to you about some of the manifestations of their holiness in their lives. But their stories are extremely edifying, and I cannot recommend enough for you to read the stories of the lives of Francisco and Jacinta. You may know that yesterday they were canonized by Pope Francis in Fatima, and while it's certainly true that these modern canonizations are often dodgy, yet anyone who looks at the lives of these children, of these two children, cannot but be amazed at their holiness. I've spoken to you so much about the two intentions that Our Lady gave to the three children to pray for, the reparation for sin and for the conversion of sinners. And Francisco was particularly occupied with the question of the reparation for sin. Francisco was consumed with the desire to console the heart of God. He understood that God is offended by the sins of mankind, and it was as if Francisco felt bad for God. God is goodness itself, and yet men just could care less about what God has given them and continually offend him. And so Francisco would spend all of his time trying to console the heart of God, and this is what motivated him to come up with the ideas of giving away their lunches, or being in the midst of a hot summer, hot and humid summer, and deciding not to drink water when they were thirsty, and things like this, penances like that. Jacinta, on the other hand, was consumed with the intention of the conversion of sinners. She could not stop thinking about that vision that she had seen of all those souls being tossed around in the fires of hell. And she wanted with all of her heart to prevent souls from going to hell. And it was all that she could think of. And there are many beautiful stories about her struggling with herself in order to overcome her weakness and offer up her sufferings to God. She was put into prison by the mayor, and she would cry and ask to be delivered from the prison. But then her cousins would say, "Well, we can help you out," and she would say no. You know, she would recover herself and say, "No, I will offer this for the conversion of sinners." But the most terrible thing I think that Jacinta had to suffer was that Our Lady told her that she was going to die young and that she was going to die by herself. Now, I think for any one of us, the idea that we would have to die away from our loved ones, completely alone, would be fearsome for us. We would not like that prediction to be told of us. So Jacinta knew this was going to happen, and it gave her a lot of fears, but she always offered it up to our Lord for the conversion of sinners. And Our Lady's prediction did come true. Jacinta had the cholera. She spent a bit of time at home, but then eventually they decided to take her to the hospital in Lisbon. And she was there for a while, and eventually she died there all by herself. All by herself. Always offering it to the Immaculate Heart for the conversion of sinners. The fact is that these children were so willing to do penance and suffer because they were exceedingly desirous of accomplishing the work that Our Lady had entrusted to them. They were conscious of this need to make up for sin, and they were willing to pay the price, even though Our Lady asked very much of them. We would say that she asked them to be heroic, asked much more of them than she asked of us. But she also gave them the strength that they were needed, even though they were tiny. If we move to Portugal and the situation in Portugal, we have to understand that at the time Our Lady came, Portugal had been under Freemasonic influence for over 150 years. And was more or less in a state of anarchy and economic ruin in the early 1900s. At that time, religion was being persecuted, churches and monasteries were being closed down, and there were bishops banished from Portugal. Religious orders were suppressed, seminaries were emptied, and worship by the Catholic faith was made very difficult in Portugal. Sometimes we think of Portugal at the time of the apparitions as just being a normal Catholic country, but the fact is that they were under Freemasonic domination and religion was persecuted at that time. Freemasons, on the one hand, they tried to remove the religious influence from the Portuguese people, and they tried to fill that void by corrupting the people, introducing all manner of immorality. And I think this situation is helpful for us, because sometimes we look at our own age and how godless it is, and we think, oh, it's hopeless. There's no way for it to turn around. But when we see the example of Portugal, we realize that that's not the case, that God is all-powerful. He can turn things around very quickly. Before 1917, the people in Portugal were probably not expecting that their country would be totally transformed by an apparition of Our Lady. They did not anticipate her coming. They just saw this long, indefinite future of Freemasonic domination, and perhaps their children and their children's children losing the faith and being brought up in a godless world. So it probably seemed impossible, absolutely impossible, for a Catholic state to be restored after a long time of secularism, just as it's impossible, seemingly, for us to imagine a day when there could be Catholic nations once again. But right after the apparitions of Our Lady, things started changing in Portugal. The Freemasons knew that Fatima was disastrous for their cause. And after the miracle of the sun, they organized a group to go to Fatima and try to destroy the shrine that was there. There was a primitive shrine at the time that had been constructed. And they even marched around in a mock procession, singing this blasphemous litany against Our Lady. Just 2 months after the last apparition, there was a Catholic by the name of Sidonio Pais. He led a coup d'etat and took over the state with enormous popular support. So he overthrew the Freemasonic government 2 months after October 1917. And 6 months after coming into power, he abolished all the anti-Christian laws that were in effect in Portugal. The bishops returned, the convents were reopened, and the churches were restored. Unfortunately, it was only 1 year after he came into power that Sidonio Pais was assassinated by the Freemasons, and the Freemasons took power again in 1918. But already things, the tide had turned because of Fatima. Pilgrimages were being made uninterruptedly to Fatima, and with immense crowds coming to the shrine. And with this renewal of religious fervor in Portugal, the Portuguese Catholics were starting to regain their self-confidence and their courage. The Freemasons, of course, they continued their machinations in order to stop Fatima, but ultimately they failed. They even tried to blow up the tree on which Our Lady would rest when she would come. But for some reason, their explosive device did not go off. They also attempted to ban pilgrimages to prevent the pilgrims from coming there, but it just was not working. Because of this attempt of the Freemasons to destroy the shrine of Our Lady, there was a special pilgrimage of reparation on the 13th of October, 1922. And 60,000 pilgrims were present at that pilgrimage. Then in 1926, there was another military uprising against the Freemasons that definitively overthrew the Freemasonic government. And you might have heard of the name of Antonio Salazar. Antonio Salazar, who was a fervent Catholic, he took power in 1928. If you mention the name of Antonio Salazar in the world, if anybody knows that name, typically they will react to that name by saying that he was a tyrant. But for us, he was the opposite of a tyrant. He was a good, holy, and Catholic leader who led Portugal for decades gloriously, restoring the Catholic faith. The reason why people would call Salazar a tyrant is because Salazar made Catholicism the religion of the state, and he only tolerated false religions. So he did his best to marginalize non-Catholic religions in the Portuguese state. So he took power in 1928, and he was to do great things for Portugal for the next several decades. On the 13th of May, 1928, the cornerstone of the Basilica of Fatima was laid. And on the 30th of October, 1930, the apparitions of Fatima were approved by the bishop of the diocese, the Bishop of Liria. Then, on the 13th of May, 1931, all of the bishops of Fatima consecrated Portugal to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And at this time, Portugal was being utterly renewed. You know how it is after the bushfire goes through. Over time, the land somehow gets renewed. There's a scorching fire, burns everything up. It seems like it's total devastation and that nothing is going to ever grow in that place again. But what do you know? You know, several months later, there's all this green stuff that starts sprouting. This is what was going on in Portugal after the apparitions of Our Lady. So the fruits of the religious revival in Portugal that were sparked by Fatima were enormous. I'd mentioned that the seminaries were shut down and the bishops were expelled. Now they started to fill up at an astonishing rate. In 1917, there were only 18 seminarians in the Diocese of Porto Alegre. In 1929, however, there were 120 seminarians. In 1933, 201 seminarians. The seminary in the Diocese of Fatima, the Seminary of Liria, had closed down in 1920. But by 1933, it was running again and had 75 seminarians. In the Diocese of Braga, in 1933, there were 478 seminarians. And there was a similar astronomic growth among religious vocations. There was also a great revival amongst the faithful. There was this group called the Pious Union of the Crusaders of Fatima that was started in Portugal. And in 1934, there were 500,000 members of this Pious Union. 25 years after Fatima, in 1942, the Cardinal Patriarch of Fatima, Cardinal Sarahara, I don't know how to pronounce his name, to be honest, C-E-R-E-J-E-I-R-A. He said the following: "In the whole country, you can hardly manage to find a handful of the enemies of religion," in 1942. "Anybody who would have closed his eyes 25 years ago and opened them now would no longer recognize Portugal. So vast is the transformation worked by the modest and invisible factor of the apparition of the Blessed Virgin at Fatima. Really, Our Lady wished to save Portugal." Meanwhile, Salazar boldly set out to stamp out the evil forces in Portugal. If in 1942 the Cardinal could say there was hardly an enemy of religion in Portugal, it was because of the activity of Salazar. One thing that he did was that he dissolved all the Freemasonic lodges in Portugal in 1935. So he basically forbade Freemasonry in Portugal. He also worked hard to eliminate communist sympathizers, and he used the powers of the state, as I mentioned, to foster Catholicism. So it's just this total transformation of Portugal after 1917. Now, Portugal is right next to Spain. In fact, Spain is the only country that borders Portugal. And you might know that there was a very bitter civil war that broke out in Spain in 1936. And it was this civil war was really a fulfillment of Our Lady's prophecy that Russia would spread her errors throughout the world, because the civil war was being fomented by communists in Spain, communists who were taking their directions from Russia and who were also being supplied with money and arms from Russia in order to destroy the nationalist government. So Spanish communists wanted the civil war to extend to Portugal. They wanted to spill over into the borders of Portugal and take over Portugal as well. One of the things they did in order to make that happen was they sent assassins to kill Salazar. But this assassination attempt, fortunately, failed. On the 13th of May, 1936, the Portuguese bishops knew that their country was being threatened by the Spanish Civil War, and they were worried. So what they did was they made a promise to Our Lady of Fatima. They said, "If you keep the Spanish Civil War out of Portugal for the next 2 years, in 2 years we will come to Fatima and we will, in the name of the whole nation, thank you, solemnly give thanks to you for your victory on our behalf. If Our Lady of Fatima obtains for Portugal victory over atheistic communism and gives the blessing of peace." And that's in fact what happened. The Spanish Civil War did not enter into Portugal. Portugal was preserved from all the horrors of that war. It was really, really horrible. There were thousands of priests and religious being executed by communists. And there's those famous pictures of communists shooting at statues of Our Lord, things like that, going into churches and defacing them. Very, very violent and anti-religious. So they came on the May the 13th, 1938, and in the presence of 500,000 pilgrims, they made these solemn acts of thanksgiving, the bishops of Portugal. Shortly thereafter, World War II broke out, and you know that it's part of the first secret that a second war would succeed the first war if Our Lady's request were not heeded. Sister Lucy passed on Our Lady's prediction of that war. But Sister Lucy also predicted that Portugal would be spared from World War II because of the consecration of Portugal to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So in other words, Sister Lucy was saying that the requests of Our Lady of Fatima were being obeyed in Portugal, and so Portugal would be blessed by not being lumped into the Second World War. Now it seemed as if Sister Lucy's prediction would be nullified, because in fact the Germans were on the point of entering into Portugal. There was something called Operation Felix. So Operation Felix was this entry into Portugal, but for some mysterious reason, apparently it's still mysterious to this day, the Germans aborted that operation and never ended up entering into Portugal. At the end of the war, both President Salazar and the bishops of Portugal publicly recognized Portugal's preservation from the World War as a miracle of Our Lady of Fatima. They didn't know how to explain the fact that they had escaped the Second World War, that it had not invaded their own country. Another aspect of the fruits of Fatima are the famous journeys of the Pilgrim Virgin statue. These journeys of the Pilgrim Virgin statue that are now being repeated in the districts of the society. I don't think it's hit Australia yet, but in the United States and in France, they've had a statue go around the entire country and visit all of the chapels of the society and stay there for a while, and there would be like a mission held during that time in honor of Our Lady to encourage devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Well, this was all started by Fatima. So there was a statue made under the direction of Sister Lucy. It's just like that statue right there. So that statue is a replica of a statue that was made upon the instructions of Sister Lucy as to how Our Lady appeared when she saw her. So the idea was to take the statue all throughout Portugal, and when the statue would arrive at a certain place, immense crowds would come out to greet Our Lady. And many, many fruits were bestowed upon those who honored the statue when it came. One way in which heaven indicated its approval for these journeys of the Pilgrim Virgin statue was with the miracle, what's called the miracle of the doves. So there were just doves that would show up and would be around the statue when it would appear in the town. And no matter what people did, even if there was noise, if there was fireworks, whatever, the doves would not leave the statue. And it's kind of mysterious that this would only happen in Catholic countries. It happened in several Catholic countries, but never in non-Catholic countries, because the Pilgrim Virgin statue ended up going to many, many different places, including places like India and Sri Lanka. But in the Catholic countries, there was often a number of doves that would rest next to the statue and would not leave. Here's what the Cardinal Patriarch, whose name I can't pronounce, what he said about the first journey of the statue. He said, "The doves so like to abide in that place that neither the noise of the crowd, nor the sound of the music, nor the explosion of fireworks, nor the rain or wind or cold or day or night, or the petals or bouquets thrown there, nothing makes them leave that place." So that's just, they made it their dwelling place. So the journey of the statue lasted from the 2nd to the 24th of December. And the doves were there the entire time, except for 3 days, from the 18th to the 20th of December. And as I say, this miracle was repeated in Spain. I think the miracle was repeated in France as well, the miracle of the doves. When we speak of the fruits of Fatima, we cannot fail to mention the pontificate of Pius XII. I mentioned yesterday that Pius XII was consecrated a bishop on May the 13th, 1917, by Pope Benedict XV. He became pope in 1937, but it was really in 1942 that he showed signs of really understanding the importance of Fatima and the desire to implement its request. And for the next 10 years, from 1942 to 1952, there would be an incredible flourishing of Catholicism throughout the world in the form of conversions, an increase of vocations, and great fervor among Catholics. And we have to say that the Pope's attention to Fatima had to be part of that flourishing, if not a major part. He's sometimes called the Fatima Pope, even though he ultimately did not consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart in the way that she requested, yet he still did many things in order to favor Fatima. And he did not mind being called the Pope of Fatima. His first official response to the request of Our Lady was to consecrate the world to her Immaculate Heart on the 13th of October, 1942. Remember that the key thing of Fatima is that God wants to establish devotion to the Immaculate Heart in the world. So Pius XII consecrates the world to the Immaculate Heart, and later in his pontificate, he would continually refer to this act and as being a very important act. He invited Catholics around the world at that time to unite themselves to that consecration by their own acts of consecration. So bishops were encouraged to consecrate their dioceses, priests, their parishes, and the faithful were encouraged to consecrate their families and themselves to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And this is, again, this is something that the society tries to do. Back in 2006, there was a Heart of Mary crusade encouraging consecrations of businesses, consecrations of parishes, chapels, families, individuals to the Immaculate Heart. In 1944, Pius XII established the Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and that was an answer to a request of Sister Lucy. So this Mass that you're so familiar with, it said on August the 22nd, but it also said every first Saturday, was instituted in 1944, same Mass that we said yesterday. In 1946, Pius XII sent a legate to crown the statue of Our Lady of Fatima on the 13th of May of that year. He canonized St. Louis de Montfort and St. Catherine Laboure in 1947. In 1950, of course, I'm sure you know that he proclaimed the Assumption of Our Lady into heaven, body and soul, to be a dogma of the Catholic faith. And 1950 can be considered to be the high point of the pontificate of Pius XII. He had declared it to be a jubilee year. He was also very strong in that year, reacting against certain theologians who had been trying to undermine the message of Fatima. I spoke of the name of Father Donis. What Father Donis tried to do is he tried to say that there's Fatima I and there's Fatima II. Fatima I is what happened in 1917. Fatima II is what Lucy said later on, what Sister Lucy said later on about Fatima. And he would say, oh, yeah, Fatima I, that's legitimate, that's true. But Fatima II, yes, we may hold as being suspect. So all these things that Lucy said later on to explain the apparitions, to clarify the apparitions, because, I mean, she was only 10 years old in 1917. So necessarily when these children were asked questions, they couldn't explain with the detail and the clarity that an adult would explain. So Father Donis would try to say that Fatima II was bogus, when in fact, if we compare Fatima II to Fatima I, we say that they fit together like key and lock. They're completely and utterly harmonious. So Pius XII was reacting against that, those who questioned the authenticity and objectivity of Sister Lucy's writings. And he decided that the closing of the Jubilee year would happen in Fatima in October of 1951. In 1952, Sister Lucy wrote to Pius XII explaining to him that the consecration of Russia, according to the precise request of Our Lady, still needed to be done. As a result of this letter, Pius XII kind of did a half measure on July the 7th. What he did was he wrote an apostolic letter to the people of Russia. And in this letter, he wrote the following. He said, "Today we consecrate and in a most special manner we entrust all peoples of Russia to the Immaculate Heart." So it was just a letter that he wrote and he mailed, or he sent, dispatched to Russia. So he did not make a public act of consecration in union with the bishops of the world. But it was a certain consecration of Russia, but not exactly what Our Lady asked for. But we definitely know that these activities of the Pope bore great fruits. We can see the flourishing of Catholicism during this decade. So just to mention some other fruits of the world. You know, by the way, after 52, from 52 to 57, Pius XII seemed to capitulate to a certain degree to those who were against Fatima. You might also have heard the story that Pius XII was, before he declared the dogma of the Assumption on November the 1st, 1950, he was still debating about it and how to word it and so on. And he was walking in the Vatican Gardens and he saw a repeat of the miracle of the sun. And this happened on a couple of occasions to Pius XII before he defined the Assumption. So Our Lady gave him a special grace to see a repeat of this miracle. You can read about it. I mean, it's written down, the official testimony of Pius XII saying that he saw a repeat of the miracle of the sun when walking in the Vatican Gardens. But as I say, it seemed like at the end of his pontificate, he was bending under the pressure of the modernist. And we know that in 19, he asked for the Third Secret and all the writings of Lucy to be sent to the Vatican. And when the Third Secret arrived, he said, "No, I will not open it, and I will leave it to my successor." And then when John 23rd opened it at the end of 1959, towards the second half of 1959, John 23rd said, "This is not for my pontificate." And from that point forward, basically, the ball was dropped in promoting the Fatima message and answering the request of Our Lady. And that's why we think that the Third Secret involves the crisis of the Church, that if my requests are not heeded, then you will have this crisis in the Church. So the message should have been revealed to the world in 1960. It was not revealed. To this day, it has not been revealed. And Vatican II happened, and the apostasy of so many members of the Church, and so on and so forth, what we're living through right now. But to get back to that sort of golden age of Fatima, where so many fruits for Catholicism were happening around the world, it was in 1947 that the Pilgrim Virgin statue began a world tour, a tour that was to bring down many graces upon the nations of the world. Just to give the most striking example, the statue visited Spain in 1948, and the final stage of the journey of the statue was in the capital, in Madrid, in May of 1948. And here's what the Bishop of Madrid said about this visit of the Pilgrim Virgin statue. He said, as soon as she entered my diocese, she never ceased conquering souls, gathering multitudes of hundreds of thousands of believers and even poor unbelievers. All bowed down before the image, acclaiming it, weeping, praying, singing pious canticles. Never, never was such a thing seen in Madrid. In the whole country, people speak only about Our Lady of Fatima, her passage to Madrid, her numerous miracles, the innumerable conversions. I would give my 25 years of the apostolate here for those 9 days. During the whole time, the priest never left the confessional. The parish priest of the suburbs told me that over 40% of the people who asked to go to confession had not done so for 15, 20, or 30 years. So this was absolutely stunning result of the visit of the Pilgrim Virgin statue, and nowhere more than during that time was the miracle of the doves more striking, more overwhelming for the countless crowds who were able to observe it. So very many great blessings. But not just for Spain, the Pilgrim Virgin statue went to other countries as well. It visited the United States in 1947, and the people, some people who were present at the visit of the Pilgrim Virgin statue were inspired to start what was called the Blue Army of Our Lady of Fatima. You may know that there were several great, massive Marian movements in the first half of the 20th century, the Legion of Mary, the Museo Immaculate, and this Blue Army. So the Blue Army was established to spread the message of Fatima and to put it into practice. After 3 years, it had over 1 million members. In 1959, there were close to 15 million members of the Blue Army. And the Blue Army attributed the conversion of many influential communists during that time to the apostolate that it was exercising. So the many high-ranking communists, such as Bella Dawes, such as Hamish Fraser, such as Douglas Hyde, who converted to the Catholic faith and used their great energy on behalf of the Catholic faith. At this time, Catholicism was exploding in the United States. In 1949 alone, there were 120,000 conversions to Catholicism. And it was definitely tied to this apostolate of the Blue Army of Our Lady of Fatima. Many countries listened to the advice of Pius XII and decided to consecrate their countries to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Many of them got together the whole of their bishops in order to consecrate their country to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Often they accompanied it with the crowning of the Pilgrim Virgin statue of Our Lady of Fatima, and they had processions and pilgrimages all over the country. So in 1946, the Philippines and Poland was consecrated to the Immaculate Heart. In 1947, Belgium, Canada, Argentina, and Hungary. And it was striking Hungary because Hungary was more or less under a communist regime at the time. Despite that, there was almost 5 million Catholics who took part in the festivities and pilgrimages of a Marian year that was held there. In 1948, the Virgin statue went to Africa, to Angola, Mozambique, and then the rest of Africa. 1949, the statue visited India, Pakistan, Vietnam, and Sri Lanka, with countless fruits of conversion to the Catholic faith. 1951, the statue came to Australia. 1951, the Pilgrim Virgin statue toured through Australia. Perhaps some people here remember, some people of a certain age will remember this visit to Australia and also Oceania. 1954, Spain, Colombia, and Germany were consecrated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So this was really the golden age of Fatima, sort of the fruits of Fatima being spread around the world because of the visits of this Pilgrim Virgin statue. And really, it would take volumes to describe all the marvelous fruits of Fatima around the world up to 1960. So as I say, we all know what happened with the Second Vatican Council and sort of the denaturing of all Marian movements. The Blue Army, the Milicia Immacolata, Legion of Mary are today only a shadow of what they were before because they've lost their true spirit. But the point of this conference and the point of this mission is to convince you that Fatima's message is God's answer to the difficulties of our time, and that God has attached special graces to all activities that seek to fulfill the request of Our Lady of Fatima, that these graces are still available to souls, that if we believe in the message of Fatima and we simply obey the request of Our Lady, we will see many great fruits. If we have not seen so many fruits in the past 60 years, it's simply because the Fatima message has either been evacuated of its true meaning or it's been abandoned. Those fruits of themselves are still available. They're still waiting to be plucked by the human race. And it's certainly my belief that many, many graces have been bestowed upon the Society of St. Pius X in the past 10 years because of the Rosary Crusades that we've had that have been directed to answer the request of Our Lady of Fatima. So you are the ones who have been given the grace to be aware of God's plan. It's like you understand what God wants and how He wishes to restore the human race through His own mother. And in that sense, because you have this knowledge, you also have a personal call. It is Our Lady of Fatima who's calling you through this knowledge that you have to be instruments of her work on this earth. So what can you do? The first thing, as I've mentioned, is, and the primary thing, is to consecrate yourselves to Our Lady and try to live in a state of total dependence upon her, to have recourse to her in everything that you do, to develop this habit of turning towards Our Lady, of referring things to her, of seeing yourself as belonging to her. That's the interior dispositions of the devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, which is the devotion she requested. Secondly, there's the external works that you can perform on behalf of Our Lady to do reparation for sin and work for the conversion of sinners. These are the two things that occupy the heart of Our Lady. She wants so much. Reparation for sin and the conversion of sinners. You can pray your daily rosary as she asked the children on all six apparitions. You can pray those four Fatima prayers that I've given to you. Also, you can perform sacrifices. The primary thing that Our Lady wants you to do as far as sacrifice is concerned is to accept the sufferings that come to you in your daily duty of state. Take these sufferings, not rebel against them, but rather offer them to her. O Jesus, this is for love of you, for the conversion of sinners, and in reparation for the Immaculate Heart of Mary, the sins against the Immaculate Heart of Mary. That's what Our Lady is asking you to do when you find your duty of state difficult, whether it be your job, whether it be your family life, whatever it is. And then, thirdly, to do works of apostolate, to promote devotion to Our Lady of Fatima. You can hand out miraculous medals. You can hand out rosaries and scapulars. You can certainly speak to others about Our Lady if you have the opportunity to talk to people about Our Lady. Perhaps people themselves are suffering from some burdens. And I think that's often a good opportunity to speak to them, to say, you know, have you tried praying to the Mother of God? Have you tried praying the rosary? Try this prayer out. You'll find that you'll be able to cope much better.